everybody, and welcome back to Don't Quit Your Day Job. I am here once again with the man who puts the dick in dictator, I guess, right? Mr. Marky T, Mark Tremaglia. Wow.
I don't know how to respond to that.
First thing is we have to establish that you're okay, because apparently it's biblical rain in Southern California, right?
It was. It's sunny now. It's beautiful out right now. It's actually like I stood outside before we got together for our lesson before we talked. But it has been insane. Like every day. And here's the weird thing. It's like, you know, it rains in L.A. not often, but usually when you get even a heavy rain, it rains for like an hour and then it like drizzles a little and stops. Yeah. And then we'll start raining a little again. It's like this weird little like schizophrenic kind of thing. But this has just been like buckets. Like it is nonstop. And I know no one feels sorry for us and they shouldn't, but it's still been a lot of rain.
Do you worry about your place up at Joshua Tree? Because I know like deserts can't handle like a ton of water, right?
I mean, we're in a pretty excavated neighborhood. Okay. Like it's been pretty well put together by the city. So, I mean, that's not saying landslides couldn't happen or anything like that, but I feel fairly safe about our property and where we're at up there. You know, I think they had snow. It was so cold. So that rain turned to snow. So that in itself probably helped freeze the ground and everything like that.
Yeah. What do you do when it rains, Mark? Like, because I know that driving culture is a big thing in LA. So you're a homebody anyway. So do you just stay home and play your guitar?
I cower in the corner and cry and whimper. No, I do whatever I got to do. I don't mind the rain. I actually kind of like it. You know, I mean, I like the sun better, but it's always nice to go out in the rain. The funny thing is the dogs, they're not used to it. And okay. Lola, she likes to wake us up at like, you know, 1 a.m. to go out, and I could hear it downpouring and I'm like, oh, I gotcha. So I grabbed the umbrella and I took her to the middle of the yard. I put her down and I walked away from her and she sprinted back to the house before I could even get back there. She's like, I'm good. And then we slept the rest of the night.
Nice. What is going on with Little Caesar? So last we talked, you guys were getting ready to announce stuff and you're going to play in Ohio apparently for some reason.
We got 3 shows in Ohio. There's a great guy out there. Him and his wife set it up, and he's going to be opening the shows. And I wish I could remember his name off. It's Charlie, but I can't remember his last name. But okay. His band will be playing those 3 shows, and he set it all up. One's near Cincinnati, one's near Cleveland, and one's near, I don't know, another place.
Another Ohio place. So my question is, what do you guys do for gear? Obviously, you're going to fly into Ohio and not drive from LA. So what do you do for gear? I'm guessing you're going to bring your fancy Les Paul, but other than that?
I'll bring the Paul and my pedal board, and we'll probably just use the gear of the opening bands. Okay. Yeah. Assuming, because it's the same band, they're doing all 3 shows with us. So. Okay.
And do they have 2 guitar players as well, or just 1?
I think they have 2.
Okay.
Right. They have 2. I wish I was better informed. I was trying to look on Instagram real quick, but it's not working out for me. So,
when you're using backline, do you ever show up in a place and it's just like, I can't use this gear? Like, do you ever get, for anyone that listens to the show, you're not a diva kind of guy, but do you ever get to a spot and you're just like, no, I can't, I'm Mark Tremaglia. I cannot use this gear.
Those words have never been spoken before. I mean, I've played on some awful, awful, awful stuff, but it's just what it is. You know, you just make the best of it and deal with it and hope the next spot has a nice one. Cause I've also shown up to gigs and been blown away by the gear they've had there, just like being, you know, blown away by how bad the gear was. And I think in my whole career, I've only had 1 show I showed up to and couldn't play. And I brought my own amp and it was like a little practice amp, and it basically died when I plugged it in on stage. And it was a country gig in a really quiet place that had no other gear, and it was already like an hour drive. And so I just sat there and watched the band, and they actually were so kind that they paid me. Just because I wanted to be supportive, so I stayed and watched them without me having playing guitar. The singer played rhythm the whole time, and they had the bass player and drummer, and they had no lead instrument. And I sat there and watched, and then after they gave me money. And they're like, you drove all the way here, you plugged in, you tried, but it didn't happen.
That's crazy. Can you name the brand of amplifier that died on you?
It was a Fender. No, it was an early 70s Fender. Fender's defense, I had never changed the tubes since I got the amp, and it was a 71, and this was like in the 2000s. So,
okay, wow,
it's not on them. In fact, I'm looking at my two amps here, knowing they need to be serviced, and after we finish this, I need to call Mike Francinini and have him do my amps up. So,
and that is a question: when you're getting ready to do a show, like if I know I'm gonna do a couple of shows in a row, I'll change my strings. Pretty much every 3 days, I'll do two shows on the same set of strings.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. And I don't worry about my amps at all. Now, hearing that story, maybe I should think about my amps a little bit more. But but I just throw my shit in the car and I go. Is that basically all you're doing when you're playing in California?
Heck yeah. Yeah, I have a few different choices for small amps depending on the gig, and I make that choice, and then sometimes I regret it, sometimes I love it, you know? I mean, some of my amps are really meant to be played loud, and I play in venues where I'm not even on one and they're asking me to turn down, so I have to accommodate, and it's rough sometimes. I mean, I at all didn't have the sound I wanted at the last gig I played because I brought an amp that was just too big for the room. And the room's a big room, but they like to mic everything and keep it quiet. And so I need to bring my Deluxe, which is a 22-watt Fender amp that sounds great at 5 or 6. So,
have you ever had the opposite problem where you brought an amp that just wasn't loud enough for what you were doing?
I've played with a lot of really loud guitar players. So, yes. And it's not my amp's fault. Like the amp would be plenty fine if it was me as the only guitar player, or if my other compatriot had hearing still, you know, but because we're guitar players, we love to play loud. So I've been in so many volume wars and it's like, you know, I say that and they haven't been like, I'm turning up 'cause he's turning up kind of thing. You know, it's just like, that's how they want to hear themselves. And so I'm always competing, trying to get on top of it.
Right. Okay. Let's switch gears. I want to ask you a few non-guitar questions. Try to get to know the man behind the artist a little bit, like the enigma that is Marky T, because maybe not everybody knows him. So in honor of my band putting out our new album, which is called Ungeheuer, which is the German word for monster, I tend to write about very simple subjects, right? I write about monsters or conspiracy theories just because it's fun and I don't want to spend a lot of time on lyrics because I don't care. But that got me to thinking, what does Marky T believe in? Because I actually don't know. We were talking about Queensryche before we started recording, and you didn't believe that Chris DeGarmo could hit the high notes in Take Hold of the Flame. And I don't know whether or not he can. But you've changed your mind since then. You've gotten maybe some new information, and you think, yeah, he was probably doing that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I saw later albums that he sang on and realized that his voice is the high soprano. Like, he can get up there, so.
So when presented with new information, you're able to change your mind.
Of course. I mean, any rational human being can, right? I mean, just have an open mind and critical thinking and, you know, like put it all together and you can make some epic decisions. And you know what? You don't look like an idiot. Do you think less of me because when I was 17, I thought Chris DeGarmo didn't sing that. And now through evidence of YouTube and life that I changed my mind, does that make me look weak?
Well, I mean, Queensryche and who's singing the high parts and Queensryche backing vocals is a very important topic for our time. So
true. We're really staying in the, are we in the 20th century? I don't know.
So I want to ask about a couple of things. One is, we went to Catholic school, we went to religious school, right? And yeah. if you watch a horror movie, a lot of it is dripping with that sort of Catholicism, that the imagery of like the Gothic cathedral or the cross or whatever. I'm talking about the Exorcist movies or any possession movie.
Yeah.
We're in the halls of Xavier High School. We had a church and we had the brothers' residence and all of that sort of stuff. Were you ever afraid, thinking back when you were a kid? Did you ever think there were like demons or anything on campus that were going to come get you?
Oh, not at Xavier, you know, but like the old houses where we grew up, you know, I mean, when you're a little kid and you go to church and you hear about hell and the devil and all this stuff, I mean, come on, it's not going to affect you. And I walked in on my mom and dad watching Psycho, and it happened to be the scene where the grandma is a skeleton yeah. and they turn the chair around yeah, and yeah. it's like, and I remember like being a little kid and losing my mind. Like, I think I jumped from the top step. My dad caught me because he heard me screaming because I was like, what? So I was pretty wimpy about that stuff, you know, like it scared me as a kid. But I always tell people, you know, nothing will get you off religion faster than Catholic schools, because I mean, you know. You went through it, but yeah. I'll give Xavier credit for one thing. That religion class that we had, at least when I was there, they covered all religions. Mm-hmm. So I got to learn about Hinduism and Buddhism and other open-minded religions that are more about peace and prosperity rather than, you know, hell and damnation, which I felt like, you know, Xavier is like, God has got this little, like, you know, jeweler's loop up there, and he's just watching you, you know, and like he's taking notes and everything you say or do. Oh, he's checking that off the list, and you're going straight to hell. And yeah. it's yeah. like, it didn't seem realistic. And once I saw what other religions offered, it just seemed to make much more sense to me.
Do you believe in ghosts? Have you ever experienced a ghost? So you're from Chester, Connecticut, which is sort of yeah. an old village near the seacoast in Connecticut, if you know your Connecticut geography. So there's a lot of old houses there.
Yes.
Any experiences, Mark?
I have. I have had a few weird experiences. You know, I'm pretty skeptical, but the fact that I had stuff happen, I still try to rationalize it and think of how it could be. But I mean, I can remember laying on the couch and of my mom's house and watching TV, and somebody whispered in my ear, and it sounded just like that. And it was scary as all get out. And I'll never forget it to this day, obviously. And
you weren't dozing or dreaming or anything?
I was watching a sporting event, laying on the couch in the house by myself, and I pretty much jumped up, and I thought somebody was here messing with me, a neighbor or somebody. You know, I had a couple neighbors that were my age that were close by, and I don't know. I just it was pretty eerie, you know. Like I don't know what else to think, and so, you know, stuff like that used to keep me awake at night sometimes, because I'd be like, "What the hell was that?" You know, and so yeah, so that was my one pretty weird one. You know, I remember being a kid having squirrels in the attic and thinking, okay. you know, somebody's definitely up there, you know, and yeah. took me a while to rationalize or finally figure it out, you know. And I mean, I'm sure if you talk to my brothers or sisters, they would tell you I was a big chicken shit as a kid. I wouldn't even jump in the pool because I saw I've never liked water that much. I mean, I like showers, I like being clean, but I don't like swimming and all that stuff. And I wouldn't even jump in the pool as a kid after I saw the trailer for Jaws. I mean, granted, I was like 8 years old, and that's probably a pretty good excuse seeing a giant creature. But they used to tease me that I would like jump in like to the edge of the pool so I could get right out before the shark got me.
Did you think there were sharks in suburban pools?
Why not? I mean, if there's demons and devils that are going to get me, like, why could there not be a shark in the O'Sullivan's pool? You know?
Yeah, that makes perfect that. Yeah, I'm going to leave that there. That makes perfect sense. You've traveled a lot. You've been in Europe, right?
Yeah.
And lots of history in Europe. And I know that you, the guys in the band, you guys like to look at architecture and stuff like that. And you've been in old venues that have done many, many shows. Any experiences like a ghost moving your guitar or anything like that?
I mean, you know, we always, there's gremlins You've toured around Europe. It is the strangest thing. You can go from one city to another, and a problem you never had, you have, like, you think you got to throw all your stuff away because your pedal board's not working, and no matter what you do, it will not work. And you go to the next city in Germany or in France, and you plug it in, and it's like nothing is wrong with it at all. And this has happened multiple times to Lauren, to myself, to Pharaoh, to Ron. Ron runs into so many gremlins with his gear, and it is so frustrating. And, you know, we have meters. Like, we can read the voltage coming in, and it's always, most venues are pretty standard. Like, it's right around 220, you know, 218, 217. It's never such a variance that it should cause what is happening.
Right.
But I can remember a show in the middle of nowhere in Germany, in this really beautiful town, like up in the mountains and everything. It was right by Liechtenstein. It was like right on the border, actually. And I had never had so many problems with an amp and a pedal board, to the point where I just plugged my guitar straight into the amp and played the show really frustratingly like that. And I'm thinking, we're gonna have to go to pawn shops, and I'm gonna have to buy new pedals. And I plugged it in. We got to Besançon, France, was our next gig. We got there, and I go, oh man! Before sound check, let me plug it in and see if it works. And like, nothing was wrong. The entire pedal board was fine.
Huh.
Even the battery, I use a battery, a lithium battery on tour, and even that was drained in the German city that my pedal board wasn't working in, and I had it plugged into the wall like it should have been charging, and it wasn't even charging, and it was 220 coming out of the socket I'm using, so we just couldn't figure it out.
This sounds like UFO stuff, so the question will be, do you believe in UFOs? Because this sounds like, you know, losing power, and then losing time, and then waking up where you didn't think. So these descriptors sound like you've been visited by Martians.
I mean, I've definitely seen stuff in the sky, but it could be satellites or the, you know, the space station up there, or whatever that thing is, you know, the mirror.
Do you believe that the Earth has been visited by other intelligences?
You know, I got to be honest, Paul, I have never really dove into it. I have a friend that is like, he is a UFO expert. He does like podcasts and everything, and has tons of followers. And one of my fellow electricians is also a huge UFO guy. And there's a shirt I wear that I always get comments on, and it's the Joshua tree, but there's a spaceship in it, like an alien, you know, the typical UFO you would see.
Yeah. What do you think about the idea that the people that get abducted are always in the middle of nowhere, or they're poorly educated or whatever, that an alien just doesn't come to a city center and take people because there's no such thing?
I don't know. You know, I mean, I've watched some UFO shows. I like Ancient Aliens and all that type of stuff. I love the dude with his hair and everything. He's stoned and talking, and like some of the stuff they say makes sense. And I thought it was interesting when one of them talked about whenever there's war or like nuclear stuff going on, they always seem to be sightings around those bases. So there's something interesting about that. Like, either they're helping or they're hindering, you know, there's something strange that goes on there. And I've seen some of those trippy, you know, fighter jets where like there's something flying next something to them there, or by them, and they just can't identify it. And it's like, it's not of this earth. So what is it?
Okay. Let's get into something a bit more serious now. Okay, Mark. And I'm going to ask you about some conspiracy theories related to music.
Okay.
And let's see if you've ever heard of these.
Okay.
Number one, Stevie Wonder is not blind.
Yeah, that was debunked just recently.
Argument. Here are the arguments. One, he picked up a microphone from the floor that Paul McCartney dropped.
Yeah.
He was seen taking a picture of Michael Jackson. He was caught looking at a smartphone. So, I mean, irrefutable evidence if you ask me.
Well, he has spatial awareness. I've been around blind people like Edgar Winter. Mm-hmm. So he still knows his way around. Some blind people still see shapes and forms, but if you have ever seen him without glasses, his eyes look crazy, you know, like they don't look like they could see much. So he may have like some what we would think of as vision, but really it's like squint your eyes as much as possible and blur them out. And that's what he sees, you know? But I mean, recently I just saw him walk on stage with somebody and grab the mic and stood behind her. And, you know, somebody had to come out and kind of guide him back to the front. So it's like, you know, he's blind.
Didn't you see him play at Guitar Center in LA, in Hollywood?
With my wife before we were together. She was there that same day.
Right. And did he seem blind?
He seemed very blind. He had somebody guiding him. He had somebody holding his arm. Because that room was upstairs, as a matter of fact. And I was there when he walked in. And I was like, holy shit. Thinking, he's not going to play. He's just coming to walk around the store and check stuff out. And next thing I know, he's sitting down at like this big keyboard. And he's singing and playing. And I remember, you know, I knew Kelly at that point. Yeah. I saw her. She was dating some guy, and I remember seeing her over there, and I was like, oh, that's cool. She's here, you know, and that was it.
Meant to be, Stevie Wonder. So I guess we could say Stevie Wonder brought you and Kelly together, right? Can we say that?
I'm fine with that.
Cool. Number two, here's maybe the most famous one. Paul McCartney is dead. November 9th, 1966, died in a car crash. The Beatles hired a double to cover up the whole thing. And then here's my favorite bit. The Beatles used their music, album artwork, and interviews to make hints that McCartney is dead.
Right? They did, because they were geniuses. I mean, I know you don't care for them, but that whole hoax they put together, and it's hilarious if you think about all the things they did, even down to like the Abbey Road, that car. The license plate says 28IF, like 28 if Paul McCartney lived, he'd be 28. You know, I mean, they were smart. It made people talk and think.
I have a theory that they did it because they wanted the publicity. And I've talked to Charlie about this, right? And Charlie says they were already the most famous band in the world. Why would they need publicity?
Because just like look at Taylor Swift, anything, even if you are the most popular at it, you still need to keep your name out there or else you don't become popular anymore. You know, I mean, look at the Kardashians. They're still popular 20 years later because they're constantly putting themselves on TMZ. They're constantly putting themselves wherever they need to be seen to make press to, you know, stay in the limelight. And that's what you got to do. And that's the Beatles knew. Hey, we got publicists. We got people we talk to. Here's a great idea. This will keep our hardcore fans interested and they think something is going on. And at that point, you know, you think, oh, maybe there is somebody that looks exactly like him, that could play exactly like him and sing exactly like him. Sure. You know?
So do you think Paul McCartney died in 1966?
I think it's more likely that Nikki Sixx died and Matthew Tripp replaced him.
So that's not on my top five list, but what I have heard is that the songs were better before he died.
I absolutely agree with that because I only liked the first two albums, right, really, and the third was okay, and that's when that whole thing, right, you know, supposedly happened.
All right, so we are moving on to conspiracy theory number three.
All
the
right.
Eagles song Hotel California is a Satanist anthem. Here are the arguments. The lyrics, you can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave, refers to a pact with the devil. When certain parts of the song are played backwards, hidden satanic messages can be heard. The cover art of Hotel California album contains hidden satanic symbols. What do you think?
Okay. I think it's a bunch of shit or shit bullshit. I think they were just guys writing songs that they thought would sell millions of records, and they did. You know,
of all bands to accuse of being Satanists, the Eagles,
right? Exactly. I mean, really, I think it's more about the music business than anything. You know, you can sign up anytime, but you can never leave. Is really like once you play music and you love it, like you don't want to get out of it, and I don't know. You know, what's interesting is like I have to say in defense of this stupid theory, Don Henley won't say what the lyrics are about. He's like, you know, it's up to you to make the story. You know, those are just the words that are put out there. So he's not saying it means anything to him either, you know. But then again, think of, you know, right. I just saw recently, not to digress, but there was a song from the late 60s by this Italian artist, and it was huge in Italy, and all it was American gibberish. And it's like he was just like trying to sound American, and that worked. He said real words, real English words, but none of it made any sense whatsoever.
There's a great song called "Die Eier von Satan," the eggs of Satan, by Tool, and it is just a guy that sounds like he's at a fascist rally, right? And it's in German, and he's just reading the recipe for brownies. That's it. But because of the way it's, you know, it's all sound, you know, it sounds like Hitler or Mussolini or whatever, just the way it's delivered. If you don't know the language, then you think, oh my God, this is a Tool or a bunch of fascists.
German's kind of a scary language. I remember, like, I would go exploring in cities, and I remember walking through some neighborhood, and some lady was yelling at her husband, and he was going, nine, nine. And the way he was saying it, I was like, I was scared. I was like, I'm going to run away from this.
Oh, my God. That's great. All right. Conspiracy theory number four. I don't think you've ever heard this, or I'll be surprised if you have.
Okay.
John Lennon was shot by Stephen King. The arguments. Okay. New York Times published an article reminding us about how Mr. King received orders through magazines from President Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan. Apparently, they wanted him dead because of his clear and outspoken anti-war stance. The title of The Shining, one of the most famous novels by Mr. King, was inspired by the musician's single Instant Karma and the lyrics We All Shine On. And then in 1999, Mr. King was run over by a car as a cover-up. So, again, connecting these dots takes some mental energy. So have you heard this before?
I have never heard that one before, no. I mean, the fact that they just grabbed Mark David Chapman while he was right there leads me to think that it was him. But, I mean, it could be Stephen King.
So this leads me to the idea that you and I could get famous like any number of politicians just mm-hmm. by saying whatever we want to say and claiming it's true, right? Isn't that, if you get enough people to believe it, then who's to say it isn't true?
Right. So I saw a comedian who had a great take. He said, the Congress and House and all that, the governmental jobs should all be like jury duty. It shouldn't be like you're going there to make millions of dollars right. and come into power. You should be going there for your civic duty. So it should be like, oh, shit, I got to be governor of California this month. Oh, my God, this is going to suck.
That's actually a pretty great idea. Yeah.
Right?
Wow. All right. Number five, Elvis Presley is alive. Here are the arguments. I don't know how this is an argument, but this is what they wrote. Some indicate that he is a U.S. government spy. So how does that make him alive? I don't know. Others right. speculate that he entered the witness protection program due to his connections to the mafia. There are some connections to the mafia that I have read about. Medical reports that claim natural death causes cannot be made public, and therefore lack of evidence equals proof that he's alive. And he faked his death to escape the pressures of fame or potential threats. So this is the plot of Bubba Hotep, a movie by Don Coscarelli, where Elvis switches places. The guy that dies is a imposter, and he goes into a nursing home where he's roommates with a black John F. Kennedy.
Wow. Okay, then.
There are lots of ideas, though, that Elvis was still alive, right?
That Jim Morrison, Tupac, you know, I mean, the sad thing is that they're all definitely not here. You know, I mean, you're not going to hide. Elvis is not going to hide away for eternity. I mean, somebody like him, as huge of a star as he is, first off, somebody's going to recognize him. And you can't keep a secret in an office of 10 people. How are you going to keep a secret between, you know, millions of people? And besides that, you know, I watched, there's a show called Final 24, I think it was called. It was on Access TV years ago, and they had this great pathologist on there, and he would get a hold of the autopsies and the death certificate, and he would go over like, you can tell that he had this for dinner because the night before, blah, blah. And then, you know, they'd have friends that would say, yeah, we went out to, like, you know, and had dinner at McDonald's. And there's like, this Big Mac is evidence.
is death culture a big thing in LA, like death pools and things like that? I've been to the Death Museum in Hollywood, which was actually pretty amazing. And I know online there's lots of communities about, like, who's the next celebrity that's going to die and, you know, all of that thing. But is that a thing out in your circles?
I mean, I'd be remiss to say no, but I think everywhere has something like that. You know what I mean? There's museums and things dedicated to terrible things all around, you know. But I mean, I would say in Hollywood, I know one of the most popular tours is like the death tour. Like, they drive you by where OJ's house was and where the Manson murders were, you know, like, that's so, you know, the Black Dahlia, all that stuff. So, yeah. I mean, there's definitely a whole market of the macabre, so to speak. And I know there's a store on Melrose that specializes in, like deathly things. They sell skulls and other things like that legally. And so, yeah, there's definitely, but I think that I would see the same type of stuff in New York, you know, in Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, maybe.
I don't know. I don't know that we have big death culture here, but maybe if someone comes out to visit you, say Charlie Thornton from the world famous band Radar Waves comes out to visit you, right? And so, would you drive him around to, like, here's where OJ killed two people or whatever?
I could. I have never been asked to do such a thing, but that's something I've done before. I mean, I've had definite friends from the East Coast come out and ask for, hey, can you show me around? Where did that OJ thing happen? Where's Venice Beach? Where's, you know? Yeah. So I've done those type of things. You know, I mean, when family would come out, they used to laugh and say I could get a second job as a tour guide because I just, you know, living out here 30 plus years and with a celebrity sort of culture and all the craziness that happens in LA, you know, I have a lot of stories.
Have you gone on any of the death tours?
I never have, but Kelly's job for like a Christmas bonus took them all on the TMZ tour.
Okay, wow.
She said it was pretty funny. They had a fun time. You know, like, they give you champagne and like they make it a fun thing. So that's why they did it, lieu of a Christmas party.
Who famously died in front of the Viper Room? I can't remember now.
That was River Phoenix.
Oh, River Phoenix, right? That's right.
And I actually rode my motorcycle by that night. I went to a party in Hollywood, off of Hollywood Boulevard, and we all went home. And it was still early, and I was like, "Hey guys, I'm just going to go take a bike ride." It was like 11:30 or 12, and I remember riding my bike by the Viper Room, and there was an ambulance and a commotion of people out there. And then I rode back down Sunset, back to the apartment, and the guys were up. And I said, "Something crazy happened at the Viper Room. I bet somebody got shot or something went down. You know, somebody got stabbed." And the next day in the paper, because there was no internet, obviously, the next day in the paper we saw River Phoenix died out front. I was like, "Oh my God! I just drove by there."
Wow. Have you played the Viper Room?
A million times. I did a live record with Michael DeBar at the Viper Room.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. Yep.
I only know Michael DeBar from being on WKRP in Cincinnati. I don't know that he's the most famous for that, but that's how I remember Michael DeBar.
I think he's the most famous for MacGyver. He was the bad guy on MacGyver. I can't think of the name of the character. Wow. Sorry. That's MacGyver.
Is he a cool dude?
He's a great guy, yeah. The album's on Spotify. So I think it's called Live in the City of Angels, and it's from the Viper Room.
Cool. And you're playing guitar on that?
I'm playing guitar on it, the whole thing.
I'm going to drop the links for Michael DeBar featuring Marky T on lead guitar. I want to thank everyone who's listening, supporting the podcast. As always, it is appreciated. Thanks to Mark Tremaglia for letting us take a peek behind the curtain a little bit and finding out who he is.
Thank you, Pauline. I appreciate that, brother. We'll have to peek behind your curtain one of these days.
Yeah, I don't think so. No one wants that.